Good afternoon. This is Donald Smith from Cornell University, meeting with Dr. Kent Roberts from the class of 1951. We're here to talk about Dr. Roberts' father, Dr. Clarence Roberts, graduating from Cornell in 1922. Today is Sunday, January the 21st, 2008, and we're in Orlando, Florida. We're both attending the North American Veterinary Conference. Dr. Roberts is a past president of that organization. Kent, let's start by talking about your father. You're very proud of him. We've talked about him before over the years. He, for many years, was the oldest living alumnus of the college, and he had a wonderful history that goes back to almost the foundation of the college in terms of his relationship with some of the very early teachers. So if you would kind of walk us through his early life from the standpoint of his growing up, how he decided to become a veterinarian and how he ended up at Cornell.
He was born in 1900, and he was about the fourth child in his family. He had two older brothers and an older sister, and then there were twins born later after him. It was a country family. They lived in the small town of Holland Patent, New York, which is 15 miles north of Utica. He lived on a farm. His father, whom I never knew, his father died before I was born. I think he was 54 years old when he died, was a great entrepreneur. He was postmaster of the town of Holland Patent. He ran a meat market. He was a cattle appraiser. He was a farmer, and I guess cattle dealer. So he was an amazing person. He was involved in so many things, and he was, a leader in the town of Holland Patent. And my father grew up in that environment of working hard, being on the farm, working with animals all his life. He graduated from Holland Patent High School in 1918. By then, his father, of course, wanted him to stay and help with the business. But my father had decided he wanted to go to college, having worked with many animals over the years, that he would become a veterinarian. His class at Cornell was the first class to have a four-year program. Prior to that, it had only been 3 years. At the time, of course, veterinary medicine was much different. There was no pre-veterinary programs. You went directly from high school into veterinary college, which he did. He did not have a lot of funding for his education, so he worked, I think, almost all the 4 years he was there, and the job he seemed to enjoy most, and I think had most of the time he was there, was as a waiter at Prudence Risley Hall. And he always said Prudence Risley. We used to call it Risley Hall. He always called it Prudence Risley Hall. He lived in College Town in a room there, and he would make the trip over to Risley all time of the year, all weather, and he would cross the trolley tracks, across the gorge. I guess it's Cascadilla Gorge. He would cross that on the tracks, and I guess he had some exciting times when a trolley would come along. But that's how he would get it. That was the shortest way to get over to Risley. I think he enjoyed that job very much because he held it a long time. As far as I know, he had it probably most of the 4 years he was there. And that helped put him through school. He joined OTS, Omega Tau Sigma Veterinary Fraternity, which I didn't know until after I had joined, and then he admitted that we were fraternity brothers, which pleased me no end. And I think while he wasn't necessarily a leader and probably was one of the younger members of his class, he was well-liked. He played in the Cornell band. He was a drummer, played a snare drum. He was really involved in campus life. And, of course, this was a tremendous change for him to come from a very small high school to Cornell University. But he just loved it. I don't think you could ever find a more loyal alumnus than my father for Cornell and the veterinary college. He was thoroughly into it. That had been such an important part of his life. So many of us now, I think, are a little blasé about things like that. But it never was that way for my father. It was a tremendous experience, and he treasured it. And he was a very loyal alumnus, and I think he was tremendously pleased that I decided to become a veterinarian and that I went to Cornell. And that pleased me to be able to please him. When he graduated, and there were very few people in his class, I remember him very definitely telling me there were 13 at some point. Now, maybe that was at graduation or soon after graduation, but I do remember that. As far as the actual education, I know he worked hard. I know he thought he had excellent professors, and of course several of his professors were founding faculty of the college. Once he graduated, he definitely wanted to practice, and he found an opening in Morrisville, New York, which was not all that far from Ithaca or from Hom Patton either. He was not married at that time, and his mother came to live with him to keep house and help. She actually moved to Morrisville and did that. However, Christmas of 1923, the Christmas vacation, my father had met a young lady in Morrisville who was visiting her relatives there. Turned out she was from Kansas, and he met her at a dance over the Christmas holidays in 1922. No, he graduated. Yes, it must have been 1922. And anyway, to make a long story short, they were married in December of 1923 and were married for 76 years. We had a tremendous celebration on their 75th, and I'll well remember that. They were great. And about the time of their 76th anniversary, my father died. My mother is still alive, and that's not part of the story, but she is. But they're apparently pretty good genes in our family.
Your dad was how old when he passed away?
99. Born in 1900, died in December 1999. He was practicing in Morrisville and was being paid in a variety of ways. For example, eggs, chickens, something that didn't involve any cash. My mother announced that she was going to have a child and that they needed a little more cash income. The cash flow was pretty bad. So my father took an opportunity to join the staff of Sheffield Farms, which was a large New York City milk company, as a field veterinarian to inspect dairy farms and milk plants in upstate New York. To do this, we moved from Morrisville to Norwich, and we lived in Norwich until I was 5 years old. And during that time, he worked for Sheffield Farms, which of course had many dairies scattered throughout New York, and he had a certain region that he covered. I think it might have even gone down into Pennsylvania. I think he used to go to Rising Sun, Maryland, different places like that. He had a large territory, and he would be traveling every day and maybe gone for a few days at a time covering this area.
What sort of vehicle did he use?
I know in practice he had a Model T, but in the wintertime that was impossible. You couldn't go any place on the roads in upstate New York in the middle of winter. So he had a cutter and two horses, a cutter being a type of sleigh. And he used to put all his equipment into the cutter. And he said many times he would have to cut barbed wire fences to get around the drifts so that he could get to a farm. And I guess he had many interesting experiences. He said, of course, the worst times were when the sleigh would upset and he'd have to retrieve all his instruments from the snow. He practiced like that for, I guess, 5 years or more. And then he took this job with the milk company. After he had been with the milk company about 5 years, they asked him to come to the main office in New York City, which he did. And we moved to a little town in northern New Jersey, and he commuted daily. The George Washington Bridge was being built at that time, and he used to take the ferry over to New York City. Once the bridge was completed, he used the bridge to go to work. He worked his way up in the company, and in 1945 he was made president of Sheffield Farms. And they had their main offices on West 57th Street in New York City. He used to spend a lot of time on the telephone because one of his first jobs when he moved to New York City was to be in charge of all the country operations to make sure that they had enough milk coming from the farms, through the milk plants, and into the city. Of course, everything was trains then. The milk was all moved by trains. I can remember the hours that he used to spend on the telephone talking to milk plant people and even farmers in upstate New York concerning the supply of milk that they needed to take care of their customers. And that was a big job, and apparently he did a good job because in 1945 they made him company president. And he would have been about 45 at the time, mm-hmm. which for a company of that size was quite unusual. Sheffield Farms was bought out by National Dairy Corporation, which was a large holding company. They had various divisions. They had Breyer's Ice Cream. They had Kraft Cheese. The company now exists as Kraft. The milk and ice cream division of National Dairy was called Seal Test. And my father became president of Seal Test soon after the buyout. That's where he remained until he retired. They had mandatory retirement at 65, and I think it just about killed my father to have to retire at 65. He was just getting going good. He just really was wound up. After that, he did a lot of volunteer work, primarily with the Red Cross, take old people to the doctor, and things like that. Of course, he was older than most of them.
What were the challenges he had relative to the quality of milk, the quality of the milk in the early years? Tuberculosis, for example, was a problem.
I can remember him telling me that how great a problem tuberculosis was and that testing wasn't being done back then when he was growing up in the early 1900s. The turnover in some of these cattle herds was tremendous because of TB. But through testing, of course, they were able to get better. Another problem they had that he mentioned was the pasteurization of milk. People were very much against that, because they were convinced it changed the flavor and the value of the milk to pasteurize it. So that they had what they called certified dairies, where they would have cows that the milk was not pasteurized. They would take the milk from these certified dairies and they could sell it as whole milk, unpasteurized. But of course the herds that supplied that pasteurized or the certified milk had to be tested frequently for TB. Back in his era, I don't remember that they had much of a problem with brucellosis. Tuberculosis was the main problem.
In one of the other interviews I've done, Kent, a gentleman who graduated in 1931 was practicing on Long Island, and he was talking about Sheffield Farms having horses that they would use for deliver the milk. And I also talked to a gentleman who graduated in 1939. He also was from the near end of Long Island, and he talked as he was growing up as a young boy, visiting these apparently large farms of horses that I presume then were used to deliver the milk in the city. Is that consistent with what you would have heard?
Oh, yes.
From your dad?
I failed to mention that my father said they owned at least 2,000 horses. And I have been to the stable in New York City, which was at 125th Street. And I can remember very well looking down a line of stalls almost as far as I could see. And they employed, of course, a good many people that did nothing but take care of those horses. And he told me about one man they employed that did nothing but buy hay and straw. That was his full-time job, to buy hay and straw for the horses.
The horses, do you know when they left in terms of being replaced by motorized vehicles?
My recollection is it would have been the late 30s and mm-hmm. early 40s mm-hmm. that the horses phased out. Of course, they'd been such an institution. The horses knew the route better than the man did, the driver. Horses would go along and stop at a certain point, and the man would jump out and deliver the milk, and the horses knew ahead of time where they were going.
So he was truly a businessman then, wasn't he?
Yes. From the time they moved him to New York City, for the rest of his career, he was primarily involved in management of the business.
Now, he had, if I remember correctly, 5 siblings, 3 older and 2 younger?
He had 2 older brothers and an older sister.
And twins.
And one younger sister.
One
who had been a twin.
I see.
And the other twin died.
Was he the only one of the children who received an education beyond high school?
His older sister, Florence, went to teacher's college in Oneonta and became a teacher in 1914. There was a call went out from Washington for office workers to help the federal government. And she went to Washington at that time and stayed, worked for Internal Revenue the rest of her career, and retired and lived many years after that.
What about the First World War? He would have gone to college just about when that was closing.
Yes, he was in ROTC at Cornell. I don't think he'd ever got very close to going into the Army, because the war ended about the time he went into veterinary college, so there was no question about that. But he was in the ROTC unit. And he had an older brother, Stanley, who was in France in World War II and came through World War II from the trenches without a scratch.
World War I.
And came home and was picking cherries in a cherry tree on their farm, and fell out of the tree and broke his neck and was an invalid the rest of his life. But did serve as probation officer for Oneida County, New York, and had to deal with some of the worst people in our society. He could drive a car. He couldn't tie his shoes. He couldn't shave himself. He was an amazing person, too.
The faculty who would have interacted with your dad include, as we said earlier, some of the founding faculty of the veterinary college. Walter Williams would have been one of them. Your dad talked about him occasionally.
I remember him mentioning his name. Mm-hmm. And Fish.
Hopkins.
Probably Hopkins, yes. Mm-hmm. Did Hopkins teach anatomy?
Hopkins taught anatomy,
yeah.
And he was, I believe, the youngest of the six founding faculty. I don't think he passed until 1951 or thereabouts.
Yeah, I think I can remember that.
Mm-hmm. Raynus Moore was a physician, taught
pathology.
I think
he did mention him, too. Then my students were much more impressed with their professors than some of them seem to be these days.
So if you would just talk about yourself for a moment, Kent, how did you become a person who either wanted to follow your father's footsteps or wanted to become a veterinarian? Could you talk about what influence he had on you and what your experiences were?
Well, I was certainly indoctrinated as to Cornell. He had yearbooks, he had all kinds of things in the house about Cornell, and of course I used to enjoy looking at those. Back then, my father was at Cornell. Their football team were national champions, I believe, so that was great to look at those football heroes in his yearbook. My father, of course, played in the band, so he went to football games at Cornell and was very much interested in that.
But you decided to become a veterinarian yourself.
When I graduated from high school, I immediately went into the Navy. This was 1943. I went into the Navy V-12 program, which was a college program. And they sent me to college, and I was in college almost the entire war. I graduated from college 2 years after I graduated from high school and was commissioned as an ensign in the Navy, and then the Japanese heard about this and promptly surrendered.
And you graduated in the class of 51.
Which was almost 100% World War II veteran. Didn't say anything about why I had become a veteran. I think it kind of just somehow narrowed down to that. My father had been one, and I admired him, and I had the GI Bill available. And I already had an undergraduate degree. Of course, my major had been naval science. I didn't have a lot of things. So I went back when I got out of the Navy in 1946 to Chapel Hill, where I had graduated, and took my pre-veterinary work, and then entered Cornell in the fall of 47.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Kent.